Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
What is up, Prep Nation? I am Terry Foy, joined once again by Dan Kaplan, and we are talking about recruiting, specifically what has gone on in the class of 2026 since we last convened. Dan, we spoke on September 12th. We posted that podcast on the 13th, and on that day, according to the Inside Lacrosse Recruiting Database, 110 players had committed between September 1st and September 12th. That number is now 240. There has been a lot of activity and a lot to discuss. How fired up are you for this conversation?
Yeah, this is going to be awesome. I think there's a ton of movement, obviously. I think we've already started to see a lot of these classes kind of really start to form into their final shape, even though that's a little bit crazy to say as early as we are. A lot of classes at the top of the cream of the crop are already kind of finishing out. And then you have some that like maybe are going to take a few more guys, but still you can kind of see, the path to the final class there. So that's kind of, cool to see those starting to round out. And then you're going to start to see some of those other programs start to, land some guys and some guys find their homes that are, in that next tier. So all of it is just, exciting to see kind of play out here.
We are 24 days into September as we record. All of the five-star players have announced their commitment. The top 44, am I correct, have announced their commitment as well?
Yep, top 44. Headed into the weekend, you had 1 through 34 off, leaving just Reese Piontek and Brady Mollett at 34, and I want to say 37. And then we had a sneaking suspicion that both of those dominoes would fall by the end of the weekend, and that did in fact come to fruition, leaving now 1 through 44 and Chase Smith at 45 is our last member of the top 50 still remaining uncommitted. And I believe it's actually 55.
Yes, that is correct. And there are 16 players uncommitted in the top 100 right now. Let's talk about how we got here. When you and I last spoke, the Duke Blue Devils had two commitments. They had picked up one from George Kelly on September 1st and a second one from Wynn Chandler on September 2nd. We discussed how they were going to have a big weekend, that weekend of September 14th, 15th, 16th. When they did. They certainly did. And basically within, I guess it would have been 3 days, 4 days from Connor Wambach was the first player in the group to commit through that following Wednesday. Seven players verbaled, highlighted by our number two overall player, James Gillis. What was it like from your perspective as the recruiting analyst to see so many of these dominoes fall the Blue Devils' way?
Yeah, it was crazy, especially considering the midfield, right? Like, number two and number three midfielders in the same day, the number two player in the class and the number five player in the class, and James Gillis and Bennett Matthews. And then on top of that, the number 11 player, and I believe he might have been on that 16th as well.
He was, yeah.
So, like, all of those guys falling, and I don't know. I personally, like, you could flip a coin either direction on whether he's a better midfielder or attackman as a college player. Like, who knows? And I think that's one of those things that, is a great problem to have. So let's just say, for the sake of the argument, that he's a midfielder. Now, those three guys, like, you might have just landed your midfield line of the future, like, multiple All-Americans on one day. Like, that is just insane.
And so there's no question that this was part of the Blue Devil staff's overall strategy. The way in which Notre Dame had entered the September 1st window with a pair of commitments, first from John Buttafuoco, who was a 25 reclassing defenseman out of Brunswick, a top 60 player according to our class of 26 rankings, and then Dylan Faison, a football wide receiver out of Florida who committed to play football and lacrosse in March before having contact with the Notre Dame lacrosse staff. He subsequently has announced his commitment to play lacrosse, and he was the number one player in the class. The Fighting Irish kind of flew out of the gates in that first 10 days by landing a goalie in Kieran Walsh or an attackman in Hunter Metz or a defenseman in Joe Legas and another one in Dylan Novak. But then, you know, it slowed down a little bit, and that was when the Blue Devils kind of made their sprint in the middle of the month. We'll talk about what Notre Dame has done to bolster their group and solidify the number one ranking here in a little bit. But before we move past the Blue Devils, we were given a more unique insight into one of their players' processes than we had previously seen, or than we had otherwise seen, with one exception, that being when Mitchell Pelkey followed Brendan Millen around, the number one ranked recruit in the class of 25, last September 1st. He did the same thing for the number five recruit in this class in Bennett Matthews, who was one of those three midfielders alongside Gillis, and you mentioned potentially for Soli. And we should also mention they picked up another one in our number 54 player, Alec Askaraglu, from Cyfair High School out of Texas, a really good football player also, who plays his club lacrosse with Mad Dog, the overtime game-winning score from the countdown event that we hosted in mid-July. But back to Matthews and the video that he did with Pelkey really once again shined a bright spotlight into what that experience is like, and probably even a little bit more compelling than Millen's in some respects, given the fact that, you know, they really leaned into the public school angle, they really leaned into the non-hotbed angle, and regardless of how much royalty, so to speak, Mark Millen is, he's also a club director. So he has navigated the recruiting process for hundreds of players at T91 Maryland at this point, not to mention the fact that he had just gone through it with his older son 2 years prior. So there was a lot about the way in which the Matthews family was kind of handling this attention that was really compelling. What did you take away from that video?
Yeah, I thought it was really, really just an awesome kind of sneak peek, right? And obviously a lot of things went his way in that video. So it's one perspective of things. There's probably a lot of kids and a lot more kids, obviously, that didn't have that midnight go, you know, the way that that documentary went. So I think it's kind of interesting to be able to get that perspective and kind of see, you know, how that really actually unfolds. And then similarly, like, if you're a 2027 or a 2028 and you, you know, don't really know what that actually looks like, there's no better, like, picture than what it could look like if you actually are one of those top of the class recruits. You know, there's probably not a better resource for you to go check out to kind of be informed on how that night might unfold if you do happen to, you know, garner that status.
No question. And I thought that the way that they wove in some of the additional points of contact with other staffs and how much it illustrated effectively how kind of quick you have to make these decisions. And I think that's kind of, it is, it will be the theme. It will be the legacy of this year. It's how we led off this conversation. I guess my point is, at some point in this podcast, we're going to have to talk about whether or not there's a downside or the goods and the bads of how fast this has gone in terms of these athletes making their commitment. But mostly we're going to be speaking about it in the abstract. With respect to Matthews having made this video, did you get a sense from that video in terms of how useful or how effective 16 days in is to make this decision, given that that's the amount of time that he ended up taking?
Yeah, I mean, in those 16 days, it's obviously a lot for you to, you know, take in. But because the volume is happening at a rate in which, you know, you can pretty much, you can get as much as you can take in, right? And in that situation, he's got so many different things coming his way that as long as he's able to, you know, kind of take things for in stride at least a little bit and keep things organized, it's a lot of information coming your way for you to be able to be informed about the process. And while it is happening quickly, you know, it's not something that, you know, you're just getting a quick run through. You know, some instances it's house visits, and every instance it's a visit on campus. And so while it does, you know, move quickly and there's a bit of a, you know, pressure cooker sense to all of it, I do feel like it does help shed a little bit of light on the efforts that the coaches are going to help make sure that you feel informed in the process. And at the end of the day, they don't want to force you into something that in 3 months from now you're going to regret, and then both of you guys are in a situation that, you know, you're both, you know, out of luck potentially.
Yeah, I'm of two minds about the speed in general, and then I'll speak to the video. The first side of my thought is, whenever I've advised anybody on how to navigate the process, the first thing I say is, it is inherently out of your control. So take into your control what you are able to. And what I specifically mean by that is you can do a lot of research and spend a lot of time in thought trying to discern, what do I want out of my college experience? So whether it's, do I want a big school or a small school? Do I want a rural school or an urban school? Do I, you know, want religiously affiliated or not? You know, all those elements, you can decide before you find out who's interested in you.
Yeah, but to a degree, like, you don't know those things until you've done visits.
But that's where I think that the if it's going to happen in a compressed time, then you have to visit kind of on your own over the course of the summer.
But that's where you don't know who is interested in you.
I know, but that's my point. You can still there are profiles of every school at every competitive level. So, like, meaning that, you know, there's kind of rural state schools that are big that, you know, run from the highest end of Division I to the mid to low ranks of Division III. So if you can figure out where you think you might be happy, then you can effectively react to the level of interest that there is in you. And so to your point, like, yeah, I mean, we can kind of decide or set aside the player who, the most important thing is, I want to compete for a national championship at the very highest level, because there are only a handful of programs that do that. And so obviously that is, you know, in and of itself, self-selecting, right? You're choosing between a lot of programs that are relatively similar in terms of what they offer. But my point is that for, like, everybody listening to this, I think that if you start by saying, like, okay, this is the profile of school that I'm interested in, what it gives you the benefit of is that when you start to get interest from a program that falls outside of that profile, then you have to decide, am I interested because I'm getting recruited? Or do I actually, say for instance, you really want to go to a small urban liberal arts school, and then you get recruited by a rural engineering school, and it's appealing. You're like, oh man, that actually might work for me. Well, at least now, because you knew what type of program or what type of school you were interested in, then you're like, all right, well, now I have to reconsider, because I'm, as opposed to, like, effectively not knowing what you want to do, and then I think you're way more likely to succumb to the cool parts of being recruited that don't actually have the staying power. So I guess to bring this in for a conclusion, it's unreasonable to expect somebody to make a life-defining decision in a day, 2 weeks, even a month. What that means is that it requires preparation time. You can't start on September 1st. You have to have started the process of figuring out what it is that you want way before you know who's interested in you. And so that's where I look at it and say, it's gone really fast, but hopefully what that implies is that this group of players in the 26th class saw how much faster the 25s went relative to the 24s and said, I'm going to have to make a decision quickly. So I am going to try to do more work early in order to be able to make an equivalently good decision as the guys that had 5 or 6 weeks in prior years.
And to go back to the Blue Devils, like, one of the guys that they have, a 9-1 guy, George Kelly, and I interviewed him after his commitment, and I think that's pretty much the moral of his commitment story as well. A pipeline of friends, high school guys that he's teammates with that, you know, are there and enjoy things and are able to, you know, sing the praises. He went to a couple of prospect days, so he already knew the staff a little bit, had already seen campus, and had already, you know, set himself up to be able to make a decision. If that interest did come along the way that he had hoped, he already knew, you know, that they had hit the rest of those specs that he was hoping for.
So let's round out the conversation around the Blue Devil class. They got a commitment from a short stick D-mitty, Brett Lundberg, on September 17th. He's a Team 10 Shawnee High School out of New Jersey guy. And we had him as the number two short stick in the class. I'm pretty confident that he was the number one short stick on Duke's board. A day later, they got a commitment from number 38, Thomas McEnany, an attackman, also from Shawnee, also from Team 10. And then things kind of paused for 3 days. And then the knockout punch. Dylan Malone, number 16 ranked player in the class. LaSalle, Big Four Triple H, missed the summer due to injury. One of the two or three most mysterious recruits in the group. And it was funny because I think when they took McEnany's commitment, the question was, well, that's 10. Are they done? Because there have been years where they've only taken 9 or 10 guys. So then when the answer came in,
everybody
no.
else is, there's this like boogeyman of roster caps that would make you think like, oh, teams are going to take less. So even that factored into maybe they're done.
Right. And they weren't. Nope. What did you think when the Malone commitment came through?
I mean, it's such a great fit in terms of like what you think of when you think of Duke midfielders, right? Like just big, strong, two-handed, and can really pretty versatilely get downhill and score it, right? And then you already have Matthews in the boat, and those are two guys that had like complete opposite summers, right? Like he didn't even play, whereas Matthews, people went from, I don't really know who this cat is, to holy cow, like this kid can really, really play. From a hotbed, plays for, you know, a really good team in the spring, like basically just everything the complete opposite. But again, like to kind of come back to that point of like rounding out that class, like I think he just complements everybody really well and is brings size and scoring to the table in a way that, you know, just really, really is impressive and what you would expect out of, you know, a Duke bound midfielder.
For what it's worth, asked a couple people who would or should know, not TJ Malone, but a couple other people close to that Malone family, and got confirmation that, or not even confirmation, I got, no, I don't think Dylan is related to them. So, not to be outdone, although there was a moment, we've got, so I don't want to get into the math because I don't even understand it fully, but last year, Patrick McEwen, who's our data specialist, created the college class ratings / rankings page on our website. So basically, what had before always been a subjective process where basically you look at the classes at the end of the cycle and you put them in order of who you think is, you know, best to worst or whatever, is now systematized. And it's awesome because now we put out all our star ratings and player rankings before September 1st, we can see how they dynamically change over the course of the period of time when players are committing. But when Patrick did it, he did it in a way where effectively he was unwilling to show the work because it was a trial and error process whereby a formula was most predictive to what the subjective rankings had been in the past, right? Because we've got this historical bank of subjective team rankings that correspond to the player rankings and star ratings that he was able to effectively back into it. And I was like, well, that's cool. And that can be like the primary function. But I also want to do one where you can effectively keep score, right? Show the increments between the classes, not just here's rank number one, here's rank number two, here's rank number three. So I asked him to create a second method, and we call that the points ranking, where that corresponds to the point of a top 100 player versus a 5-star versus a 4-star versus a 3-star. And so there was a point, Notre Dame never lost there. Once they became the number one class, which, you know, was when we named Dylan Faison number one, they never lost their number one ranking in that predictive subjective ranking, but they did lose in the points ranking. They fell behind Duke for a brief moment, and then they went forward with their finishing move, their finishing act, as it were. So I mentioned they came out of the gates with, let's see, so Buttafuoco, Faison, Kieran Walsh, Dylan Novak, Hunter Metz, Joe Legas, Max Bouchaw. Those we, I think, talked about on the last time, you know, when we recorded this podcast last. On the 13th, the day this podcast dropped, they added faceoff specialist Kieran Sweeney. They added two more guys, both on September 20th. Number 21 attackman Jace Banks and number 51 attackman Ty Curry. Banks from the Hill School plays with FCA and ECT-24s, and Curry from St. Sebastian's plays for Lacassette. What was your reaction to how those guys rounded out the group for the Fighting Irish?
Banks was unbelievable. To me, I thought that there were other spots that he could land, and so I knew that that one was one that was like really highly competitive. So for them to land him in addition to everything else that they already had in the boat, I thought was like a sprinkle on top in a way that like I didn't even imagine, to be honest. And so I thought that that was pretty incredible for them to be able to get him, and especially knowing the lengths that some of the other teams were going to be able to try and get him, and some of the offers that he had on the table.
And as far as Curry?
I thought that he was interesting as well, because there's already like
a bunch of lefties.
Yeah, exactly. And well, yeah, and not even that, but like just his skill set is one that like I guess I don't know where he fits amongst that class that already is pretty good. But again, I mean, I think that that's one thing that like among good problems to have, like you're just loaded with weapons, right? And I think he's a guy that is able to come in pretty early and you know, win some matchups, and again, just like continues to add to this like iron sharpens iron approach of everybody we're bringing in this class can really, really play.
So the number three ranked group in the class right now is the Virginia Cavaliers. And while I'm confident that Duke and Notre Dame are done, I don't think Virginia is necessarily done just yet. Since we last recorded, they added a faceoff specialist in Ben McCaffrey, our number 95 ranked player overall.
Brian
McCaffrey. Tanner Ulrich, a middie out of St. Ignatius in California. And then really started to go to work last week when they added number 9 overall player Lucas Garcia, an attackman out of Brunswick, a player that we have talked a lot about on this podcast over the course of the last year. 2 days after that, they added their first and so far only pole in the class, number 14 overall, Ethan Bramhoff. And then a day after that, they added number 20 attackman, Noble and Gruneau, Massachusetts, Tuck Gilbain. What are your thoughts on what Lars Stiffany and his staff put together over the course of the middle part of September?
Again, another group that I think really meshes well together offensively. Like you can kind of see them kind of starting to fill different roles and specs. Josh Logan, a guy that, you know, when we went and recorded the last time, was already in the boat, but I think he's one that, you know, just brings a lot of versatility to the table offensively. Lucas Garcia and Tuck Gilbain, in theory, could be a really, really dynamic 1-2 punch, you know, like two different guys that you could put down at attack. And if both of those guys are down there, now you have a different, yeah, you're going to put some pressure on teams to have to pick who they want to cover with their one and one with their two. And so as you kind of see this evolving, you could see that. And I think Ethan Bramhoff is one of the more perplexing players for his like playmaking ability with the pole. I don't know that his best days ahead of him are at LSM or if he ends up playing close. And, you know, can impact the game in a different way from there. But I think either way, he's one that, like, you get a playmaker in that system and you let him roll and play with instincts, the ceiling is, you know, just incredibly high.
When we recorded last, Harvard was number 3 overall in our class rankings. Over the course of the subsequent 5 days, they slipped to number 7, and then they started to make their own push. They added on September 19th, Wyatt Shaw. They also added a 4-star in attackman Jay Cohn. And then on the 22nd, they added number 68 overall player Tate Sedlacek, who plays with Tanner Ulrich, who we talked about, that midi going to Virginia. But all of that was on the heels of, on the 18th, adding our number 3 overall player and top-ranked attackman, Cooper Brozek, who plays with 3D New England and Evolve and goes to Deerfield. Were you surprised that Brozek picked Harvard?
Yeah, a little bit. I knew it was in the mix, but I could have seen him at one of those ACCs.
I could have seen him at Duke or Cornell.
Yeah, sure. And really, I could have seen him at any of the Ivies. I feel like there's like a natural pipeline there. I feel like there was a natural fit kind of with each one of them, and I'm sure that he would have garnered plenty of that attention. But I just felt like there was obviously so much, you know, competition that anybody really landing him would have been a little bit of a surprise. But I thought that there was going to be, you know, an ACC come through and be able to put together a pretty enticing package. And, you know, I think it's pretty cool for Harvard to be able to land the, you know, number 1 positional player in the class.
Yeah, he's, you know, again, a player that we've spoken a lot about. You know, I remember when we did this the first time over the course of the summer, he was a player that we spent a lot of time talking about because I had just seen him at the Grade 8 event at Brunswick and was so impressed by his dodging ability. Yep. In addition to what you would expect from a Canadian off-ball finisher. But the size, the athleticism, it is an incredible... It was very impressive what Harvard had done before they got that commitment from Brozek. And now, you know, they're pretty solidly situated in the number four spot overall, and I don't see that shaking. But there was another team in number five that had a similar trajectory insofar as when we recorded on the 12th, Syracuse class ranked number six. It dipped... Or I'm sorry, it ranked number nine. It dipped all the way to 12, and then with incremental gains over the course of the intervening week or so, it has ticked all the way back up to number five. The highlight of that group was number 13 overall, Jaden James, who committed on the 17th. But that wasn't the only one, as you would expect. Excuse me. They added a three-star faceoff guy in Foster Huang. They added number 43 overall, Harry Schneidwind, midi out of McDonough, who's super versatile. They added Drew Maloney, a four-star midi out of Buford in Georgia, continuing that Georgia to Syracuse pipeline. And then just earlier this week, they added the number 72 overall player and an enormous defenseman out of St. John Bosco, Dom Perfetti, on September 23rd. How do you feel about the way the Orange group has come together?
Yeah, I think one of those guys that I'll specifically, and actually it's two of them, two guys that you mentioned, neither one of them fell in the top 100, but Drew Maloney to Syracuse and Jay Cohn, who you mentioned earlier, to Harvard. Both of those guys were like fringe top 100 guys that really kind of put the pressure on. And had we gone to 125 or 150, like very likely would have been in that mix. So those are two, you know, strong gets as well. And I feel like that just additional context is worth noting. I think in addition to kind of how that Cuse class is playing out, again, I think it's interesting to see the way that, you know, you have lots of just like complementary players here. Like I can already kind of see in my head a Jaden Rodriguez skip to Hanson Peck, who just like hammers it from the lefty wing. Like that is going to happen at some point in a lacrosse game, and lacrosse fans right now can note it, come back to, what are we, September 24th, 2024. This may not happen until 2028, but it's going to happen at some point.
You know? I'm glad you shouted that out because I just realized the Peck commitment came after we recorded on the 12th. So we hadn't talked about that.
Oh, same day.
Yeah, that's right. So we were talking about Rodriguez, and I think that we actually hinted because we knew that the announcement was going to come, that Peck was going to fall. So yeah, that's, I mean, that was an oversight on my end for not including it in that rundown. But yeah, I mean, the other guys that had already committed at that point, in addition to Rodriguez, Nick Rayfield, I mean, it's a really solid group for the Orange.
Yeah, and another midfielder that just brings a ton of versatility and scoring, shooting, defense. His highlight tape is one to go back and watch. The versatility is unbelievable. One clip, he's like taking the ball from somebody who's dodging him from X, and the next clip, he is scoring a goal coming from X, and he just does a lot of really, really nice stuff. And that highlight tape kind of displays, like, amongst all of the players in the class, perhaps one of the most versatile skill sets.
Continuing on, North Carolina was in the number two slot when we spoke about them on September 12th. They have gotten passed by all the groups that we've already named, but have nestled into that number six spot and seem pretty likely to stay there. Just added what is arguably the most interesting player in the class in Charlie Croteau. I don't know if I say that name properly, but another huge defenseman. He goes to Western Reserve, but he's actually from Oklahoma.
Yeah, Cassia Hall.
Yeah. I mean, we had an awesome story that Matt Kinnear wrote earlier this week, or I guess it would have been last week at this point, about Helen Park, who plays for Arizona State and is a member of the U.S. women's box lacrosse team that's playing in the Box World Championship right now. I'm familiar with a handful of players from Oklahoma. By the way, I'm pretty sure it's still on the books that playing lacrosse in Oklahoma is illegal, which dates back to like the Native American days. Yeah, it's crazy. I don't know whether that's been stricken from the record, but yeah, it's been incredible to see the emergence and prominence of Oklahoma lacrosse, at least on my purview, over the course of the last couple days. Continuing along, Princeton, no stranger to effective recruiting. They have slotted in at the number seven spot. We talked about a handful of the high-profile offensive players, specifically Noah Hahn, on the last podcast. But they did some work at the defensive end, bringing in our number one overall short stick D-Mitty, Remy Zeitlin, and then number 41 overall a defender out of Culver, Flint Leverett. Those two guys I know you're very familiar with. Flint has been one of your favorites since last fall. How do you feel about the way that the Tigers have positioned themselves going forward?
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like sometimes you hear a guy going somewhere and you're like, oh, you know, it really, or, you know, you have different reactions to that news. And sometimes it's like, oh, that's a perfect fit. And that's how I felt with Flint and Princeton. Like, I think of Pace Billings and I think of, like, a strong, athletic LSM close D type that can really impact a game and be disruptive and is cerebral and has a good stick. And I think Flint is very similar to that and like a bit potentially bigger package. Right. And so I think that you have that kind of skill set and you already see that path. And I felt like that was one that like you kind of already saw. And then Remy, I feel the exact same way, right? Like you think about two-way midfielders, someone that's going to strap you up on defense, cross-check you to the ground, pick up a ground ball, and then all of a sudden is, you know, a real threat in transition, right? Like that's Remy. He was our number one short stick in the class. And to see Princeton get another guy that kind of fits that mold of, you know, thinking back to so many different guys over the past, that kind of pop when you think of like somebody that fills that skill set. I think Remy is one of the perfect fits when you hear like, oh, he's going to Princeton. It was like that light bulb kind of clicks like, oh, yep, that makes sense.
We'll wrap up the conversation with two more programs. They currently notch in at 8 and 9 in our overall class rankings. The Maryland Terrapins graph, because we have this line graph, and I set it to start on the 12th and finish on the 12th. They started at number 8 on the 12th, and they are currently number 8. But it looks like an EKG in between now and then, having gone up and down. They landed a commitment on the 13th from Danny Rooney, a pass-first attackman, son of a coach, Long Island guy. Really just kind of a very interesting overall player who ranked number 83. The following week, they picked up a pair of poles that I found to be really interesting insofar as their complementary nature. Jackson Allen, who we ranked number 74 overall, he's a Sweelax, Florida kid who's going to Salisbury this year. And then Bryce Barrett out of Boys Latin played for the Baltimore Crabs, rated a 3-star. You know, those guys are, just again, like kind of very interesting to me in terms of how they complement each other. They got a big middie in Chris Doshna out of Marcellus, high school teammate of Nick Rayfield's, who was ranked number 50 on the 18th. And then, you know, arguably the cherry on top of the class, as it were, Brady Mollett, son of Mike Mollett, former Maryland All-American defenseman, Art Bishop Spalding, Annapolis Hawks, ranked number 37, regarded as one of the best quarterbacks in the class.
And I think that's the important distinction here, right? Like, I think that when he fell off the board, a lot of schools were bummed from that. Maybe we can find somebody that's more dynamic, shoots it harder, stronger, faster, whatever, but you're not going to find many better pure lacrosse players, and that's what Brady is, right? And so I think that people were, you know, kind of disappointed to lose out on a potential quarterback in their class, knowing that he's one that brings that cerebral approach and is pretty ready to fill that type of a role.
So you said two things that are kind of interesting, because for me they I don't want to say they conflict, but they're in contrast with my evaluation, which was the thing I loved the most about him was how recklessly he played, in terms of like all gas, no brakes was kind of the vibe that I got. But at the same time, so that's like a little bit in contrast with the cerebral, but the biggest part of my evaluation is that I can feel him gaining control as he gets older. And so
I also might argue that is the cerebral approach, because you knew that was what his team needed in the moment. Right? Like, I don't know the situation in which you saw him, but I've seen him in several times where, like, okay, like, this defender is stronger. Like, he benches more than me. He squats more than me. He'd beat me in a race, but I'm going to score a goal on him because that's what my team needs.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and my point, I guess, is as he understands how to rein in the recklessness, I can see him getting even more better, right? Like, climbing the overall player rankings because he starts to round out his game and maybe physically develop, I don't know, but in a way that actually like becomes a little bit more rounded is the word that kind of comes to mind right now.
Yeah, and here's a question for you, and not specifically to him, but like I think for his case, it came down to a couple of schools that are pretty much, you know, competing on the field all the time and in these recruiting battles. So he's one that Maryland's going to be particularly happy to get. How does that like weigh in when somebody, one of those dominoes falls?
Well, so I think you're asking a couple questions. The first is, when you win a recruiting battle against a team in your conference, it's not a plus one. It's a plus one and a minus one for your opponent.
Right.
So that obviously has a ton of value. And then the second side is when you can keep an in-state kid in-state, that helps right. from a, I didn't lose a recruiting battle to an out-of-state opponent, which I think helps as well. And then the last element is just the legacy side, yeah. right? You know, and all of these act on the assumption that the Maryland staff wanted him, which obviously they did. They took his commitment. But at the same time, there are elements of if you can check a bunch of those boxes for folks outside of your program that are fans of what you do, it goes a long way, meaning that they want to see legacy stay home. They want to see in-state desirable kids stay home. And so in a tie goes to the runner type of way, yeah, it was a good get for Maryland for sure.
Right, right. That makes sense.
All right, let's bring this plane in for a landing. And I am going to let Kaplan cook, because I know you've got a lot to say about this, and I don't have a ton of questions. So, Georgetown, number 9, your thoughts on what Kevin Warren and his staff have put together.
I love this class, and I've said it a couple times. One of the ways that that manifests into me realizing how much I love it is someone said something critical of it, or maybe not critical, but less than complimentary about it. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, this is the class that perhaps for me, I'm like the most aware of, because it feels like every kid they've brought in was one that like I went back and forth on like, if he's a 4, then did I consider him as a 5? And if he's a 3, then maybe he was considered as a 4. And some of the guys that aren't, you know, in that top 100 range were considered for that top 100 range that were just right on that fringe. And so for
I can confirm that with the spot number 100, which I believe went to Nigel Struzzini,
correct,
there were 4 defensemen that we were deciding between, and Thomas Bluen was one of them.
Correct.
And he is an unranked 4-star that is going to Georgetown.
And Chris Streisar.
Yeah.
Both of those guys were in, and I don't know if Chris was in that final 4 in the
right.
red that like I recall sharing, but he was in that like next tier as well of like right below to miss that. So they had a couple of guys that were like not in that range, but like we considered for that 100 and maybe landed closer to 125 and in the like 3-star, but we're as close to a 4 as it comes, or like the 4s that were as close to in the top 100 as it gets. So both a lot of that. And then I love Andrew Pascarella, who's a little bit less known defender from Georgia, tall, lengthy. I think he's a little bit raw, but there's still so much room to grow for him. And he's our number 86. So he is in that 100. But I think part of the reason that he's in that is for what is it's still to come for him rather than what he's done. And I think that that's one thing that like maybe fans don't necessarily get without that type extra context. But I think he's another one that is, you know, really talented. Budreski is as polished as they get. I compared him to Paul Van Bastelaar. He was an Under Armour All-American in the 24 class, like just garnered a ton of attention and continues to get better, and you know, may see him making plays here in the next few months.
Yeah, no doubt. When I reacted to, or the way in which I reacted to their class was, it just felt like everything was bolstering a strength, meaning that whenever they took a new commitment, it was just like, yep, it's another guy who's going to help him in the middle of the field. It's
yeah.
another guy who's going to help him in the middle of the field. It feels like whether it's the D-middies, the long sticks, or the two-way midfielders, it, like everybody is just going to make it easier for them to get the ball from defense to offense, or more difficult for opponents to get the ball from offense to defense. Or, well, you get my point.
No
from
doubt.
Georgetown's offense to Georgetown's defense.
No doubt. And I think and they got a staple in the goal that is one that people have really, really praised. And I think it's just like I use the phrase sure shot sometimes, or like can't miss. And I just think that the level that he plays with and the style that he plays – I think he's going to be a great fit as a at the collegiate level in Cage.
All right, Dan, big question, because there are, I don't know, 100 guys that we haven't talked about that committed since we last recorded. Final question, anything stand out? Anybody else that we didn't hit on that you want to?
Yeah, so I'll go to Ohio State, and I can't leave out my Dartmouth boys. But Dartmouth, obviously bringing in Silky Milky Conway, really, really just an impressive grab right there, and one that they can help bolster the whole class, right? And then Ohio State, I think that they're one that we talked about in the last episode, but since then, James Finch and Hunter Thompson, two attackmen, that I think that that's one of the better duos that we've seen commit, a quarterback, a Dodger, and then a lefty finisher that can really rack up goals. So I think in terms of like bringing in, you know, pieces that are, we know are going to mesh well with each other, that's a duo that perhaps, you know, we're seeing on game day tearing it up in the future.
It's going to be a while before I stop laughing about Silky Milky Conway on the inside. That's unbelievable. Milky Conway rapper, the first five-star that Dartmouth has landed in program history, number 19 ranked player overall, committing to the Big Green. He's going to the Woods. And as you mentioned, the cornerstone of what has been a good class outside of just him.
Also Michigan, 9-4 stars. Shout out Michigan.
That'll do it for this edition of the Isle Preps podcast. If you like what you heard, leave a rating and a review. Tell a friend, and we'll be back later in the week with either more How Recruiting Works. Actually, no, we're going to be back with more How Recruiting Works. Just don't know who we're going to be talking to. So make sure to check that out on Friday. And we, as always, appreciate you listening.
Boom.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.